call the remote hearing of the Environment and Natural Resources Finance and Policy Committee to order. Today is April 8th, 2021. This meeting is held in accordance with Rule 10.01, which was passed and allows for remote hearings. All remote hearings are recorded and live streamed by House Public Information. The clerk will take attendance by roll.
All right, Jim Hansen is present. Wasilik.
Wasilik present.
Heitzman.
Heitzman present.
Akin.
Akin present.
Ackland.
Ackland present.
Backer.
Backer present.
Becker Finn.
Becker Finn present.
Ackland. Ackland. Fisher.
Fisher present.
Green.
Present.
Igo.
Present.
Jordan.
Jordan present.
Keeler.
Keeler present.
Lee. Lee. Lippert.
Lippert present.
Lewick.
Lewick present.
Morrison.
Morrison present.
Nelson.
Nelson present.
Tice.
Tice present.
We'll do one more call for Ackland. And Lee, a quorum is present.
The quorum is present. The next item on the agenda are the minutes for Tuesday, April 6th, 2021. Representative Nelson, have you looked at the minutes?
Yes, I have, and I would move the minutes from April 6th.
Representative Nelson moves the minutes for April 6th, 2021. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Minutes are adopted. Thank you. Next, we'll move to the Omnibus Environment, Finance, and Policy Bill, House File 1076. Vice Chair Wasilik, would you like to take the gavel?
Yep, I sure will. Representative Hansen, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair. I will move that House File 1076 be recommended to be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee, and then I will move the DE amendment.
Representative Hansen moves that House File 1076 be recommended to be re-referred to the House Ways and Means Committee, and we move the DE2 amendment to get it before the committee. I believe since we already did the walk through the bill, we'll start with public testimony today. And the first person that we have on the list is Commissioner Stroman from the DNR. Commissioner, if you could just introduce yourself for the record.
I will, Madam Chair. Thank you. My name is Sarah Stroman, and I am the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. And I'll also note that with me here today is Assistant Commissioner Bob Meyer. I want to thank you for the opportunity to be here today to comment on the House Environment Omnibus Bill. And I want to begin by thanking Chair Hansen and the committee for your work this session and for including the 2020 and 2021 lands bills, the DNR policy proposals from 2020 and 2021, and the LCCMR recommendations. These all are really important bills, and we're glad to see them move forward. I'll also note that the House bill includes some policy provisions on which we'd like to continue to work with the committee, and we previously testified to that fact. I'm not going to talk further about policy items today, and instead we will follow up with the committee in a letter. I instead want to focus my comments here today and testimony on the budget portion of the bill. We appreciate the inclusion of many of Governor Walz's budget initiatives in this bill. And a few weeks ago, as you may recall, I was before your committee talking about how important our state's outdoor recreation system and natural resources are to Minnesotans coping with the pandemic. As we discussed then, and we've discussed a few times throughout the session, and I know that you all have been seeing for yourselves throughout this last year, Minnesotans have been embracing outdoor activities in record numbers to manage stress and anxiety of the pandemic and to find solace in nature. Given the value we're seeing Minnesotans place on our natural resources and outdoor spaces, we believe now is a time to reinvest. The investments in this bill will help ensure that we can fulfill our mission, meet our legal obligations, and provide Minnesotans with the services they expect and that they are using in those high numbers. We appreciate the inclusion of many of the governor's proposed general fund investments in the House bill. This includes an investment for expanding capacity of the state forest nursery to increase the number of seedlings available for planting as an economical and common sense way to offset greenhouse gas emissions. This also includes funding for chronic wasting disease monitoring, surveillance, and carcass disposal. We'd also like to encourage the committee to consider fully funding the governor's recommendations for legal costs and public safety related costs. The reduced funding levels contained in the House bill are likely insufficient to cover these unpredictable and critical costs. And as you know, we cannot cover general public safety response costs out of dedicated funding sources, nor is the DNR in a position to absorb general fund costs for either public safety work or legal costs. Speaking of public safety, we strongly support the committee's work on conservation officer pay, and we appreciate your commitment to ensure that all licensed peace officers in the state of Minnesota receive consistent treatment. We also appreciate the inclusion of two key proposals that will allow us to make needed investments in connecting people to the outdoors at state parks and recreation areas and through water recreation by increasing state park vehicle permit fees and watercraft registration fees. These investments are essential to support infrastructure to provide opportunities, as well as our operations to ensure that people can continue to use those opportunities. We look forward to working with the committee on the details and timing of these fee increases as we work towards final passage of this bill. Finally, we thank the committee for including changes that modernize the RIM Critical Habitat License Plate Program, including the change in the matching requirements and the increase to non-game funding. We look forward to continuing to work with the committee on this topic. So in closing, Madam Chair, we thank you. We thank Chair Hansen and the entire committee for the work that you have done this session and the work that you have done to assemble the House Omnibus Environment Bill. As we've seen from last year's resurgence in our outdoor recreation system, now is the time to be investing in these systems for the future. And as I noted before, we will follow up this testimony with a detailed letter outlining further comments. And I'll just end by saying we're stand ready to continue to work with you and the committee as the bill moves forward into its final form. Thank you very much for the opportunity to be here.
Thank you, Commissioner. Next up, we have Commissioner Bishop from the MPCA.
Hello, I'm just getting my video started. Thank you, members of the committee and Madam Chair. It's my pleasure to be here. I am Laura Bishop, the Commissioner for the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. I wanna thank you all for the opportunity to testify. We see at the MPCA, see House File 1076 as a strong bill. That will allow MPCA to address new challenges and meet the critical needs so that we can protect the environment and improve public health. When I presented the governor's budget to you last month, I shared our three priorities for the 2022-23 biennium. One was keeping PFAS out of our drinking water and the environment. Two, preparing Minnesota for extreme weather. And three, prioritizing compliance and assistance of our team in environmental justice areas. The bill aligns very closely with these priorities. Thank you for including nearly all of the governor's recommendations for MPCA's FY 2022-23 budget into this bill. Just 2 weeks ago, MPCA shared that it has found PFAS contamination in groundwater surrounding 98 closed landfills statewide. That's almost every closed landfill the agency has tested. At 59 of those sites in more than 40 counties, PFAS concentrations exceeded health levels and health guidance. And at 15 of these sites, the PFAS concentration leaking into the groundwater is more than 10 times higher than health levels. This is a growing problem for every community and every family in Minnesota, and it is what keeps me up at night. That's why MPCA, Department of Health, MDA, Agriculture, and DNR formed an interagency team to figure out what needs to happen on this. We presented our PFAS blueprint in February, which identified these critical gaps in order to move forward on PFAS. And your bill f- fully funds our work to fill those critical data gaps so we can define that scope of PFAS contamination in Minnesota and move forward to address it. We also appreciate that your bill includes the PFAS policy items, especially the ban on PFAS in food containers and consistent labeling of compostables, both of which will help protect health and environment as well as benefit the composting industry here in Minnesota. Your bill fully funds our effort to focus compliance and enforcement in environmental justice areas and includes foundational environmental justice policy. Our data shows that Black, Indigenous, people of color, and low-income Minnesotans are more likely to live near sources of pollution from facilities, as well as from transportation and neighborhood sources. And these communities are more likely to be impacted by air pollution. For our people of color and Indigenous communities, a whopping 93% of these Minnesotans experience air pollution risks above a health risk guideline. It's a huge disparity, and your bill provides much needed tools to start tackling this problem. Funding for the three new FDEs and for the state of the art portable air monitoring equipment will be focused on environmental justice areas so that we can find problems very early and prevent the type of years-long enforcement like we've seen at Water Gremlin and Northern Metals. We also appreciate the environmental justice policy language in this bill that we worked on with Representative Lee and others. Although you partially fund the climate resiliency grants that we recommended, we appreciate that the amount of $750,000 in the 2022-23 biennium grows to $2 million per biennium in the TAILS. Mayors around the state are stepping forward to support these grants because their cities need to right-size stormwater infrastructure to meet the changing weather patterns. Extreme weather has resulted in 150 wastewater overflows annually. That's partial treated or untreated wastewater entering Minnesota's lakes, streams, and rivers. And the Insurance Federation of Minnesota has said that extreme weather is costing homeowners more than $1,000 annually in insurance costs. We just can't afford, our families can't afford this, our farmers can't bring crops from field to market, and businesses can't ship their products, and residents are left to clean up this mess. So we thank you for including these policy items on wastewater treatment overflows as well. There's a lot of positives on your bill, and the positive impacts, thank you for funding the St. Louis River Mercury TMDL study, which will help define mercury contamination in sediments and help address the concerns of subsistence anglers. Air appropriation statutory increase, which ensures our air programs can continue at level at the current service levels. The Landfill Responsibility Act, which slows the increase of waste going to landfills and boosts our reuse and repair economy and industries. Funding and the funding for our supplemental budget request for water operations, which allows us to continue technical assistance to cities on wastewater and stormwater issues and assistance to counties around septic system issues. We're still reviewing your changes to the governor's recommendations on the closed landfill investment fund, and looking forward to a continued conversation on that. Finally, thanks for including full funding for our 2020 and 2021 LCCMR projects. One of these projects, research on PFAS and land-applied biosolids, fills a critical gap identified in the PFAS blueprint. The other is the completion of the groundwater contamination mapping project to produce data that will be widely used to protect drinking water. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify. We appreciate your strong bill that is supportive of the environment and public health here in Minnesota. And my team is also here, Greta Gauthier, our Assistant Commissioner for Legislative Affairs, and other members of my team, should you have any questions later in the committee. So thank you again.
Thank you, Commissioner. Next up, we have Katie Pratt. Ms. Pratt, if you can introduce yourself for the record and present your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Katie Pratt. I am the Executive Director of the Environmental Quality Board. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. On behalf of the board, I want to thank the chair and the committee for your hard work on this bill. A number of provisions in the bill align with shared goals the board has been working towards, including addressing climate change, protecting pollinators, addressing emerald ash borer, and considering environmental justice in our work. I'd like to recognize also a spirit of collaborative problem solving in this bill and a striving to work together on challenges we all know are complex and can't be solved overnight. We appreciate the funding for EQB included in this bill. This will allow us to continue our work at a sustained pace and make progress on these issues in the coming biennium. With all the uncertainty we've faced over the past year, it is heartening to feel that we can stay on track and continue advancing environmental outcomes and serving communities across the state. So I just wanted to thank you for this bill. Again, I agree with Commissioner Bishop, who spoke previously, that this is a strong bill. It advances many of the shared priorities of our board, and thank you for your time today.
Next up, we have John Jashke from the Board of Water and Soil Resources. Mr. Jashke, if you could identify yourself for the record and present your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. John Jashke, Executive Director with the Board of Water and Soil Resources. And since I also kind of have my presentation in two parts, the previous part that I provided last time you met, and I'll give you just a few more things, and then we'll be concluding it with a letter in follow-up fashion. So thank you for the opportunity. Thank you also for hearing the so many bills you did. There were a lot of issues and topics that Minnesotans expect us to pay attention to and work on in the environment and natural resources area, and you certainly put your work in to hear many and most of those topics come in some way, shape, or form through your committee. So thank you for that, first of all. I also appreciate the work you did to include the governor's recommendations for the general fund adjustments. Our agency is, you know, in essence, solely reliant on that source for our programs and our operations. We don't have the ability to utilize fees or other mechanisms for revenue. So that's a really important part of our functional work of our agency. Day-to-day work is always important, and that general fund component is a really huge part of it. Also, thank you for acknowledging the recommendations that the governor put forth in the climate area. As the commissioners indicated, that's a high priority topic for the administration and certainly for Minnesotans in general, and of course, even beyond that, right? The two components that were responsible for the soil health and the water storage pieces, the policy language you have in there is good, and you made it better, I think, by adding, for example, some language around the soil health practices, getting more specific about some of those things, and we appreciate the attention and detail you've provided. I know you also included some funding for the lawns and leggings, which, of course, is an important program as well, and so we appreciate you paying attention to that item in addition to the other climate pieces. And then finally, I just mentioned the Soil and Water Conservation District funding, which has been a challenge for many years, and I appreciate the effort of the committee to come up with a creative solution, I think, and maybe it isn't all the way there yet, but I think we'll, you know, get a good start with the transition that this bill envisions. I expect to work on that with you and other members in the weeks ahead. So thank you for the opportunity to provide this information. Again, the letter will be following up in the next few days.
Thank you for your testimony. Next on the list, we have Jessica Mendoza. Ms. Mendoza, if you can just identify yourself for the record and present your testimony.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. So I will, can everyone hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Great. And so, yes, my name is Jessica Mendoza, and I'm the Legislative and Research Intern at COPAL. And the bill we're hoping to get your support in is the Cumulative Impacts Bill, also known as the Frontline Communities Protection Act. But of course, we're also offering our support for the overall omnibus bill as well. And so our organization is currently leading a coalition of 15 plus organizations, and some of the individuals a part of the coalition are affiliated with many organizations such as the Sierra Club, Met Council, and Climate Generation. And it's important to know that New Jersey has a bill passed similar to the one we want to help pass in Minnesota, but ours would be specific to our community needs in our state. And it's also important to be intentional with focusing on marginalized communities, especially in our definitions of overburdened communities, which we want to be inclusive of. And the cumulative impacts bill would acknowledge more than just the physical impact of pollution by centering people in various communities. And one personal example I would like to share of who the bill would impact and is directly affected by these different issues of environmental pollution is of someone who has worked with Copal in the past. And this individual moved from Puerto Rico to the United States seeking a better life. And she lived for 4 years near the HERC incinerator area in Minneapolis and considered herself a relatively healthy person. However, she began developing respiratory problems, which were diagnosed as asthma. And her two children have also a similar problem now with asthma. And she attributes living near the incinerator as leading to these health problems. And as a mother, she suffers because her children cannot do the things that healthy children do, or at least have different issues or different considerations that they have to keep in mind. And so the prevalence of toxins released into the air by places such as trash incinerators is something that needs to be urgently addressed. And the environmental impacts need to be considered alongside the health and well-being of residents in affected areas. And we are very certain that the omnibus bill will be a step forward in terms of environmental justice, as well as healthy living and thriving. So thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Tony Quillis. Mr. Quillis, if you can identify yourself for the record and present your testimony.
Afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Tony Quillis. I'm a Director of Environmental Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and thank you for allowing me to make a couple of brief comments on House File 1076. Madam Chair and members, I think at the beginning of the 2021 legislative session, personally, I thought there's probably two priorities at the top of the list for the legislature. And one was putting together a budget for the state of Minnesota. And the second one was, because of COVID, helping our economy start down the road to recovery. And this included making sure our employers, as well as our employees and our customers, are protected, safe, and healthy while we start down this road to recovery. Madam Chair, I'm not going to touch on a number of the provisions that are included in this legislation that I've testified against previously, but my main concern is when all the provisions are added together and taken as a whole, the increased mandates, the regulations, the fees and taxes send a very concerning message to Minnesota businesses and any future businesses and economic development projects that may look to locate in Minnesota. As we've learned in the last few years, financial capital, and especially this last year, the workforce, are extremely fluid and mobile. My worry is that when businesses who must compete on a regional and global level start to put together the factors that are required to locate or expand a business, that we as a state are going to miss out on these future economic development opportunities because of these increased regulations and mandates. One theme I hear from our members, and you've heard me talk about it before, is that their concerns are time, cost, and uncertainty on economic development opportunities here in the state. Unfortunately, Madam Chair, I think that House File 1076 adds to time, cost, and uncertainty and doesn't start us down the road to recovery. Madam Chair, thank you for the time to make the comments on House File 1076.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Margaret Monson. Ms. Monson, if you could identify yourself for the record and proceed. I'm not seeing Ms. Monson pop up here. Just do a quick look. So we will go to the next person on the list, and if she does show up, we'll bring her back up. Next, I have Erin Rupp. Ms. Rupp, if you could introduce yourself for the record.
Hi, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
Okay, let me start my video, too, if I can figure it out. There we go. I'm Erin Rupp of Pollinate, Minnesota. I strongly support local control of pollinator-harming pesticides, prohibition of neonic and chlorpyrifos on state lands, the soil health cost share, and lawns to legumes programs. We support the A12 amendment that calls for pesticide-treated seed disposal rulemaking. For a decade, your body has significantly funded pollinator research and habitat creation, yet Minnesota pollinators continue to decline. It makes sense. Pesticide exposure is a known driver of this decline, and we continue to leave pesticide mitigation unaddressed. There's a pesticide industry talking point that if we're talking farm fields and pesticides, we should be talking state lands and cities. These spaces are addressed exactly in your bill. Article 5, Section 16, the local control is a simple step, that would aid cities if they choose in providing the pollinator protections they and their residents have already heavily invested in by delegating them authority to address a part of the pesticide piece of the puzzle. Our biggest city, Minneapolis, has been advocating for this authority since 2014. Please reference Margaret's testimony and written testimony in support of House File 1210. We're having this conversation because the EPA's pesticide registration process allows products on the market with unprotective labels, consistently pushing the burden of science onto the public to prove the toxicity of these chemistries in our bodies, ecosystems, beehives. Wow, I am not a scientist, and my tax dollars go to fund the registration of these chemistries, the compensation to beekeepers for hive losses through federal insurance, while losing my own hives and being responsible for the science and advocacy work of changing this law. That's a system that's not functioning for me. And these are bees. It's not my body, my children's body. It's regulatory capture. An inexact comparison, in 2018, the global neonic market generated $4.42 billion in revenue, and median farmer income that year in the U.S. was negative $1,500. So these bills, that they're small, critical, common sense steps, and I am encouraged to see you taking them. Thank you so much for your work and for hearing my testimony today. And for my daughter's participation too.
And Margaret, your testimony. Yep, I see you, Ms. Monson. Sorry, I had your name misspelled on my agenda here. So Ms. Monson, if you wanna go ahead and present your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm Margaret Monson, I live in St. Paul. I'm an entomologist and a beekeeper. And I'm asking for your support today for House File 1210. To prohibit insecticide use in wildlife management areas, state parks, state forests, aquatic management areas, and scientific and natural areas, if these insecticides are from the neonicotinoid class or containing chlorpyrifos. In my graduate research studying caddisflies in Minnesota, I worked in different aquatic habitats, including within the Iron Springs Bog, SNA, in northern Minnesota. Each SNA is unique in its ecological descriptions, containing some of the rarest and most sensitive flora and fauna, each integral to the health of that ecosystem. Studies that document the presence of neonicotinoids in aquatic habitats in excess of toxicity regulatory thresholds find bioaccumulation in aquatic organisms, negatively impacting populations of invertebrates, such as mayflies, which we've lost some 50% in some populations, and caddisflies, which are not only food for fish, but maintain the health quality of water quality of aquatic habitats. In 2020, the MDA determined that neonics are the surface water pesticides of concern. Since some public lands are leased by farmers planting corn and soy pre-treated with neonics, spilled seed is consumed by birds, deer, and other mammals. Of the 800 deer spleens taken by hunters in 2020, from all across the state, 61% had neonics in their tissues. Neonics are found in our soil, from agricultural use, and from urban areas, are having devastating effects on our pollinators. Beekeepers are having declines in their honeybee colonies. And of our 470 species of native bees, 28% are now in decline, and our bumblebees. Lastly, these native pollinators are the super glue that sustain our wild places, because they all rely on these pollinators for ecological integrity. And lastly, the pesticide chlorpyrifos, the volatile neurotoxin designed to be lethal to insects, due to its drift, has contaminated drinking water in sensitive watersheds, as well as degrading land adjacent to ag fields. It's been proven dangerous to human health, particularly to the developing brains of children, and Minnesota has labeled chlorpyrifos a chemical of concern, and the EPA has indicated it poses, quote, significant risks to water, humans, and animals. I ask for your support for 1210. It should be written to ban neonicotinoids and chlorpyrifos in all of these state areas. I also ask for your support for Amendment 12, which will make it impossible for treated seed to end up going to our ethanol plants to avoid a disaster such as what took place in Mead, Nebraska. Thank you very much for hearing me today.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, I have Doug Carnival. Mr. Carnival, if you can introduce yourself for the record and proceed. Mr. Carnival, you have to unmute yourself.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Doug Carnival, a law firm of McGrand Shea Carnival in Minneapolis, and I represent the National Waste and Recycling Association, and I have a few comments with respect to the omnibus bill. Three areas of concern, and I'll be brief. First one has to do with the PFAS provisions of the bill, which are in Section 43 and 44, Article 4. As you know, solid waste facilities, which include landfills, waste-to-energy facilities, and compost facilities, are receivers of spent waste, like the wastewater treatment facilities in the state. We support a strong focus on examination of upstream products and packaging in the waste stream that ultimately get thrown in our trash and end up with PFAS in our facilities. We do not support legislating a PFAS standard, nor do we support a hazardous waste determination in legislation. It's our position that these issues need to be determined at the federal level by the US EPA so that we have a national and uniform standard approach to PFAS. Secondly, we'd like to comment on Section 17 and the subsequent provisions dealing with the MPCA budget and the 3% landfill tax. Our association opposes the MPCA budget item establishing a new statewide 3% gross revenue tax on MSW landfills, be they public or private, that creates a new refuse and repair grant program to be administered by those landfills. Trash bills will go up when landfills pass through millions of dollars in taxes to the residents and businesses that this will cost. Reuse and repair is not our business, and grant administration is not what we do. As laid out, the program will require significant state resources, five FTEs, and significant private sector and public sector resources at the landfills. Furthermore, the SCORE program, which we have had for many years and it's being increased, is really the place and the best source of funds for these programs to occur. Lastly, we'd like to comment on the waste composition study provision in Section 22 of Article 4. NWRA opposes legislation that requires waste composition studies at landfills every 3 years. Waste composition studies are extremely expensive, would require a facility to provide access for a study to occur at the site, which will be disruptive to operations and pose safety hazards for study participants and liabilities for all parties. Across the private sector, access to private sector files and information is overly intrusive by the MPCA and should not be allowed. Thank you, Madam Chair, for letting me comment on these provisions, and we, of course, stand for questions and would like to continue working with the committee on the future of the bill.
Thank you for your testimony. Our next testifier, I haven't seen her show up, so we'll skip over her for now and we'll go to Mr. Spreck. Mr. Spreck, if you could identify yourself for the record, and I know you've testified before us on several pieces before, if you can keep your testimony pretty brief here.
Absolutely, Madam Chair. My name is Tim Spreck. I'm here speaking on behalf of the Minnesota Deer Farmers. It's probably no great surprise I'm going to be commenting on the items in Article 7, many of which I've commented on before, and our opposition remains the same. Just to highlight a couple, we have changes to fencing regulations. We allow hunters to keep and kill any escaped deer. We have no new deer farms, and we have no movement of deer, even deer moving to slaughter. And then the last provision is the transfer to DNR. While we appreciate the bill author's attempt to try and make this language more workable, we do still oppose this language, Madam Chair. Deer farm servitude are defined as livestock in statute, and contracting with the Board of Animal Health or Veterinarian Services really makes no sense, considering that the board is already doing a good job in this area and has the staff on hand. There's also a fiscal note associated with this based on what we saw in the spreadsheet. Madam Chair and members, as you consider your deliberation on this bill, I'm hoping that you will consider the 165 small farm families that are currently raising whitetail deer in Minnesota and the fact that the likelihood is extremely high that these farmers will all be put out of business should these provisions become law. There are also concerns with statutory taking without compensation and constitutional property rights violations associated with this bill, which I have also spoken to in the past. So thanks again for your time. I'm hoping that we'll be able to amend this down the line to be more palatable to these hardworking young farm families. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Amber Boogie, and I know you've testified in front of us before as well, so if you can keep your testimony shorter. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm Amber Bouge, and I'm the Chief Deputy Recorder for Hennepin County. I'm also the co-chair of the Minnesota County Recorders Association's Legislative Committee. We've submitted a letter that contains the full details of our challenges with the portion of this bill that adds a $25 surcharge to the recording fee for mortgages and deeds that are subject to tax. I'll just briefly highlight a few points. While we agree that clean water is an important cause and very much appreciate the work of the committee in this regard, an added surcharge to the recording fee is not the appropriate funding source. Minnesota's current uniform recording fee is a nationwide model. If this surcharge becomes law, Minnesota will go from having one uniform transparent recording fee to having a different fee for mortgages and deeds that are subject to tax. Further, this fee is regressive, as it would apply to all transactions that are subject to mortgage and or deed tax, regardless of the amount. I'd also like to note that our position is supported by the Minnesota Land Title Association. We hope you will consider alternative funding sources. Thank you again for your time today.
Thank you for your testimony. Next on the list, we have Roger Schroeder. Mr. Schroeder, if you can identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Roger Schroeder, Lyon County Environmental Administrator and representative of Minnesota's Landfill Operators Group, which is a subset of Minnesota's Solid Waste Administrators Association. I'd like to provide just a minute of testimony on Article 4, Section 17 through 21, the Landfill Responsibility Act. We are in opposition to this act for a couple of reasons. First of all, we do not feel that the taxing method is appropriate, as the solid waste management tax is already assessed on all garbage entering landfills. We also disagree with the premise that of which this act was written, in that land it was asserted that landfills have no incentive to reduce the amount of garbage entering their landfills. As a recipient of several grants from MPCA, the landfill that I manage, which serves eight counties in rural Minnesota, has already made efforts to try to divert waste coming to landfills. We've started mattress recycling, hiring adults with disabilities to do the processing, expanded that to car seat recycling and styrofoam recycling. So clearly we have a vested interest in trying to divert waste from the landfill. And I think it's important, Madam Chair and representatives, for all Minnesotans to understand that it isn't landfills that are the source of landfilling problem. It's the habits of all of us who wastefully discard items that could be recycled, or purchase too much, or don't use a refillable water bottle instead of a plastic bottle. All those techniques that we can implement to try to reduce solid waste. And Madam Chair, just in closing, I appreciate the work that MPCA has done on trying to perform waste reduction. We would be happy as an organization to work with them to try to refine the objectives that they want to set forth through this measure. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Andrea Lovell. Ms. Lovell, if you can introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, we can hear you.
Great. Thank you, Chair, members of the committee, for this opportunity to speak today. My name is Andrea Lovell. I'm speaking on behalf of Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. MCEA is a nonprofit organization with almost 50 years of experience using law and science to protect Minnesota's environment and the health of its people. MCEA supports House File 1076. MCEA is glad to see that the House budget provides general fund revenue support to agencies without shifting to dedicated funds as it stands in the Senate's proposed budget. We would additionally like to highlight a few components of House File 1076 that we believe are especially critical. First, Articles 2 and 3 include ENRTF appropriations for fiscal years 2021 and 2022. This would support hundreds of jobs and make important investments in scientific research and habitat protection, as well as restoration across Minnesota. We applaud the authors of this bill for respecting the LCCMR's process and following its recommendations. Second, Article 4 includes critical provisions for environmental justice in Minnesota. These sections increase overall public participation in decisions with environmental and public health consequences. These public processes are critical to democracy, to the overall health and well-being of Minnesota's environment and all who live in it. We thank the authors for their persistence on these issues and encourage continued consultation with the communities who are overburdened by pollution as this bill moves forward. Those most impacted by pollution must be part of the process of defining environmental justice and advancing solutions to injustice. Third and finally, this bill includes several sections in Articles 5 and 6 that would improve soil and health, soil and water quality, and would establish effective plans for water management and storage as climate change makes this mitigation more difficult. Many of these sections are the result of bipartisan efforts to protect Minnesota's resources, and we thank the committee for working together to retain and maintain Minnesota's water, to increase resiliency to Minnesota farms, and to utilize a variety of infrastructure technologies to improve the quality of drinking water. We appreciate the work that has gone into this bill that will protect and improve our state's air, water, and soil, and we urge a yes vote. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next on the list, I have Sarah Wolf. If you could please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Sarah Wolf. I'm with the Minnesota Environmental Partnership. We are a coalition of over 70 organizations across the state that focus on a number of different environmental issues, but we are united in our understanding of the climate crisis as being one of the forces that affect all of those issues most. We really appreciate the hard work of the committee to put together a bill, this bill that seeks to limit pollution, improve human health, ensure our water supply, restore ecosystems, prevent further environmental injustice, and address climate change. We fully support House File 1076, and I'll limit my testimony to just a few highlights. First, moving the Environmental and Natural Resources Trust Fund appropriations. We appreciate Chair Hansen and the House Environment Committee's early action on the ENRTF package from last year, and including both this and last year's proposal in this bill. And while we might prefer that they move independently, this is really important that we get them funded now for the projects that will work to restore and protect the environment across the state. And we strongly support many provisions that move Minnesota forward. Understanding, and we thank you for these provisions, and I'll just go through quickly some of them here. Understanding that we must use the potential of our forests for carbon sequestration and requiring the DNR commissioner to establish carbon sequestration goals in public and private forests in Minnesota. Investing in soil health by establishing a statewide soil healthy farming goal and pairing that with a soil health cost share program. We appreciate the measures for pollinators that have been mentioned already, but they include prohibiting the use of neonicotinoid insecticides or chlorpyrifos in state lands, allowing cities to have local control over pesticide regulations, stewarding the disposal of seeds treated or coated with pesticides, and establishing a lawns to legumes program to increase pollinator-friendly habitat. We appreciate that the legislature is beginning to address the serious and unnecessary harm to people and wildlife from lead ammunition and fishing tackle, by requiring non-toxic shot on wildlife management areas in farmland zones. We appreciate the improving of our ability to compost effectively by requiring labeling accuracy regarding compostable products. We appreciate the providing funding for the important work of soil and water conservation districts through a small fee on certain housing filings. And we also want to highlight the great work that was done to require the PCA to perform a cumulative impacts analysis of new or expanded projects that seek permits, where communities are already living in an area that experiences environmental injustice. We thank you for your work, and we support House File 1076.
Thank you for your testimony. Last on the list, we have Sherry Smith. Ms. Smith, if you could identify yourself for the record and then present your testimony. You'll have to unmute yourself there.
You'd think it's figured out by now. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Sherry Smith. I'm a resident of the White Bear Lake area and a founding member of the Neighborhood Concerned Citizens Group, who formed because of the water gremlin situation that happened in our area. I'm here today to do what I can to make sure that what happened in our area never happens again in another community in the state of Minnesota. There's still work to be done to make right what went so wrong in our community. If you're familiar with the Office of Legislator Auditor report published less than 2 months ago, you know there are significant and important recommendations contained in that report, policy and budget changes recommended that are reflected in the Environment and Natural Resources Omnibus Bill. These policy and budget changes are critically important in ensuring that the water gremlins travesty does not happen again. Our community suffered because of restrictions, restricted policy, budget issues. Thousands of residents were impacted, and we need to see these policy and budget changes move from recommendation to reality. We need to allow the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency to reopen permits, to be reimbursed for costs related to burdensome oversight of companies like Water Gremlin, provide funding so that MPCA can buy monitoring equipment and hire staff for air monitoring. And most importantly, MPCA must be allowed enforcement actions to include imposing an order to cease operations for extreme cases like Water Gremlin. As this situation unfolded, our community was stunned over and over again at the lack of authority that MPCA held. Their resources were more than tapped because of this serial offender, and they need the authority to take meaningful action if another company would so egregiously violate the confines of their permit. The Neighborhood Concerned Citizens Group, who represents thousands of residents in the White Bear area, is in full support of the omnibus bill, and we look forward to your full support as well. And I thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you for your testimony. That's the last person we have on our list today. So what we're going to do now is take member questions. And there are a number of folks in the Zoom room who are available to answer questions. Once we wrap with questions, then we will move to amendments. So any member questions at the moment that folks want to ask? Not seeing any hands raised. I'll give it another minute here. All right, don't see any questions, no hands raised. So we will move on to amendments. And the first one we have is the A12 amendment. And Representative Hansen, I believe that's the A12 is the author's amendment. Would you like to move that amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair, I will move the A12 amendment.
Representative Hansen, can you tell us a little bit about the amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A12 amendment appropriates $133,000 and requires the MPCA to promulgate rules for the disposal of seeds coated with pesticides. This was a provision that was heard in the Ag Committee in House File 766, but they did not have enough budget item to cover it. So I talked with Chair Sundin, talked with the Department of Ag and the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. This covers a regulatory gap in unused treated seed. And so it would have the MPCA promulgate rules. Also, the author's amendment adds a set of accepted practices to water quality storage, provides Bowser with to give priority to the lower Mississippi River Basin, and some additional technical changes suggested by Bowser. It includes tribal governments and with the other government entities that are eligible for funds to deal with Emerald Ash Borer. It establishes base funding of $250,000 a year for No Child Left Inside beginning in FY 2024. Establishes ongoing funding for non-expiring air permit provisions in the DE2 and makes a number of technical and cleanup changes.
Representative Heintzman, I see your hand up. Did you have a question about the DE or the author's amendment or something else?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a question on the A12, which I think that's what we're discussing. Isn't that correct?
Yep, that is what we're discussing. Go ahead and answer.
No, I'm just seeing on the bottom of the first page, Madam Chair, maybe Representative Hansen could speak to it, the part about local government. I'm wondering if you could explain how some of the goals would, on the last sentence of the first page, the part about local government, if you just expound on that a little bit, that would be helpful.
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Heinzman. So looking, you're asking about line 1.22.
Right.
So what we're dealing with here is unused treated seed. And you have that, generally your local governments are dealing with solid waste. A lot of the solid waste is handled with counties. So the reason it has the regulatory jurisdiction of state agencies and local governments is the issue of unused treated seed falls in a gap. The Department of Ag believes that their responsibility is with the seed law, not the pesticide law, and that the seed responsibility ends when that seed is planted. And clarifying who's responsible for what, we want to make sure that the local governments are involved in the rulemaking. Because often, again, the counties deal with solid waste.
Sorry, Madam Chair. I thought Representative Hansen was done there. Sorry. No, just follow up would be a clarification. Just I'm wanting to know, would this allow locals to regulate seed disposal?
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Heinzman, that was not the intent. Intent was to make sure that the locals were involved in this. The responsibility and the rulemaking is going to have to be with the state agencies, but we want to make sure the local governments are involved, again, because a lot of solid waste, where does that seed come back in? So we've got to make sure local governments are involved in those jurisdictional questions, that their input is valued.
Madam Chair.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure I completely understand, but I'm sure we can have a conversation about this at another time, possibly on the floor, if there is further clarification needed. Thank you.
All right, so Representative Hansen has moved the A12 amendment. Any further discussion on the amendment? Not seeing anything else. All those in favor of adopting the A12 amendment, please say aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
No.
Aye.
No.
The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. We'll go to the next one here. The next one I have is the A1 amendment. Representative Eklund, I believe that you are putting forward the A1 amendment, and I believe you have some technical changes you'd like to incorporate into the A1. Ms. Taylor, thank you, Representative Eklund. Ms. Taylor, can you walk through the technical changes to be incorporated for us, please?
Yeah, Madam Chair, lines 1.3 and 1.4 of the amendment are incorrect. The committee could either just drop those, or I can tell you what the correct instructions are for those.
Up yeah, Ms. Taylor, why don't you tell us what the correct?
Sure. So line 1.3, it should read page 23, line 31, delete 2,135,000 and insert 2,435,000 and delete 2,135,000 and insert 2,435,000.
Okay, so that is the oral changes that we'd like incorporate into that. And so we will, Representative Eklund will move the A1 amendment with those changes incorporated. Representative Eklund, can you just give us a brief explanation of the amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll move the A1 amendment. And what this does is works towards developing a statewide ATV trail plan, similar to what MinUSA does with their snowmobile plan. And I've talked this over with ATVAM. As we build out the ATV trail system in the state of Minnesota, we need to have a comprehensive trail plan in place so all members of the state have a reference to where to go to ride. And also so that as we build out the ATV program, that we are doing it in an orderly manner.
Chair Hansen, do you have any comments on the amendment?
I support the amendment.
I do see a question. Representative Green, is your question about the amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Go ahead and ask the question.
Madam Chair and Representative Eklund, I didn't quite catch what you said, but you sound like you said this was similar to the one that like the off-road vehicles requested here a few years ago. Is that right?
Representative Eklund?
Madam Chair, Representative Green, no, this is nothing's, well, I don't know if you'd call it similar or not, but what we've been doing is these different ATV groups across the state have been getting funding from various sources, whether it's state, county, or grants that they've been able to get available. And what we want to do is build a comprehensive trail plan similar to what the Snowmobile Association has done for their statewide trail access.
Representative Green, did you have a follow-up?
Yes, Madam Chair. So, Madam Chair and Representative Eklund, in the previous version of this with the off-road vehicles, they were required to seek approval from local governments before they crossed, like townships where they'd be using certain portions of roads, perhaps. Now, this being a trail, that might not be the case, but if it is, do you know that in this plan, if there is any requirement for approval from local governments?
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Green, that's an excellent question. I actually had breakfast this morning with St. Louis County Commissioner Paul McDonald, and St. Louis County, Couchiching County, and Lake County are looking to put together a joint powers board for ATV trail approvals, and that's the exact thing that they're looking to be able to take care of, rather than taking care of it one trail at a time.
Representative Green, any follow-up?
That's good, thank you.
All right, any other questions about the A1 amendment? Not seeing any hands. All those in favor of adopting the A1 amendment, please say aye.
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 All those opposed, say no.
No.
The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Next up, we have the A3 amendment. Representative Becker-Finn, I believe that is yours. Would you like to move your amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair, I will move the A3 amendment.
Representative Becker-Finn, you want to go ahead and explain the amendment for us?
All right, thank you, Madam Chair. The A3 amendment is pretty simple. It would make the gar a game fish instead of a rough fish. And for those who are unfamiliar with gar, I'm going to share a little picture with you. So the gar is honestly one of the coolest fish that lives in our state. They can use both a swim bladder and gills to breathe. They can even live outside of the water for up to 24 hours. They're also really unique in their shape. Some folks refer to them as living fossils, as they're kind of dinosaur looking in appearance. And so what we've found is that as fishing practices have evolved and bow fishing has become more popular, gar are one of the species that are targeted more and more. And because they are classified as a rough fish, there are no limits whatsoever on how many fish can be taken. And of course, bow fishing is pretty cool, and it's, you know, we're happy to have folks participating in that, especially in the targeting of invasive species like carp. But when it comes to a fish species like gar, it's a native species. They've existed very, very long time. They're very under-researched in what could happen if they're suddenly overfished in a way that is not managed. And so for that reason, bringing this forward so that there will be some options in creating some limits on the take of gar in our state.
Get myself unmuted here. Representative Becker-Finn has moved the A3 amendment, and I do see a question from Representative Heintzman. Go ahead, Representative Heintzman.
Madam Chair, I am wondering if maybe DNR could help us out on this one. I'm familiar with bow fishing. I'm an avid bow fisherman, so I am wondering, is it unusual that a legislature would be weighing in and deciding what is and isn't a rough fish? I'm assuming that there is a scientific definition to some extent, and I'd love to get some feedback from DNR on this one.
All right, is there someone from DNR who wants to take this one on? Go ahead and pipe up here. there is.
Madam Chair.
Commissioner Meyer.
Members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. Representative Heinzman, we were made aware of this amendment when it was posted yesterday. I have talked with our fisheries section manager, Brad Parsons, about this. And we have discussed removing gar and bowfin, actually, from the commercial list. The primary reason is that they're potential predators on young invasive carp and can tolerate low oxygen conditions, as Representative Becker Finn discussed, where young invasive carp live. We have seen in some bowfishing tournaments recently, gar were the most common fish taken. We also know very little about the gar. They're a fairly long-lived fish. They're also a very small component of our commercial fish harvest. In fact, the pounds of gar taken in one bow fishing tournament was higher than total commercial take of gar in the river. That being said, we don't have a lot of biology on this. Brad Parsons, our fisheries section manager, and his staff have considered this as well as other changes to fish classification. We're willing to work with the legislature on this, but again, this is one that we're trying to get our arms around. It's related to our bow fishing permit, our recommendation to permit bow fishing tournaments so that we would be able to regulate the take and target species that are there. Finally, Representative Heinzman, the question you have about the legislature doing these types of activities, I think people know there is a proposal to change the walleye limit from 6 to 4, and we have been hearing from people that are concerned about the legislature doing that. They would rather see the department do it. We do support that initiative, but we have been hearing that the legislature shouldn't be making those types of decisions, but we are willing to work with the legislature on this issue.
Madam Chair.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My follow-up to the commissioner would be, is there any data to back up the author of this amendment's assertion that there may be some kind of detrimental species impacting result from the bow fishing that's taking place or other factors? In other words, are we seeing a species decrease? Is that something that's being looked at? Do we have anything to back that assertion up?
Representative, or Madam Chair.
Commissioner Meyer. Yep, go ahead.
Thank you. Sorry about that. Representative Heinzman. It's very similar to the biology on the turtle populations we have in the state right now. We don't have a great handle around the population or the science of the population, but we are concerned about the population status. So that is why we're interested in trying to determine and work with you all, the legislature, Representative Becker Finn, on how do we protect these resources. And again, it's you can make it the game fish, you can take it off of the rough fish list. There's different options to do, but I think I'm making a long answer, which should be a short one. Yes, they should be protected somehow.
Madam Chair.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment. You know, I think it would probably make sense to get some more research, as the commissioner was mentioning, before we start weighing in as the legislature heavy-handedly making decisions for the DNR. So just an opinion. Thank you for the opportunity to ask the questions.
All right, next, I see Representative Bagger has a question. Representative Bagger.
Yeah, Madam Chair, thank you. This is for the author, Representative Becker Finn. Who did you talk to about this bill, and what feedback did you get from the fishing community on this, please?
Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This was actually brought to my attention by the fishing community via social media with concerns about, you know, if you've ever seen the photos of the large takes of fish from folks who are bow fishing. You know, it's not like when you have your stringer of fish when you go out angling. It's literally piles, many pounds of dead fish on the shore. And folks were just concerned. Initially, folks were actually concerned that it was a wanton waste situation. My understanding is that, you know, people are, depending upon who the person is, some folks are able to get sort of thread that needle by then using those dead fish as fertilizer. Typically wanton waste is, you know, completely wasting it and not using it whatsoever. But, this was something that was brought to me by members of the public. And then in my research, there are actually several fish biologists and doctors from throughout the country who have been working on this issue for many years of protecting fish like this, like the gar, and really bringing up the issue of, you know, there is no such thing, many of us who have grown up fishing, there's really no such thing as a garbage fish, except maybe a carp, an invasive carp. But, you know, we really should be protecting all of our native species and not just those that are highly prized like walleye.
Representative Becker, did you have a follow-up?
Yeah, please. And I appreciate that. Thank you, Representative Becker Finn. So it sounds to me, this is what concerns me, is we're making, have an amendment without, I mean, I get it. You've seen some posts on social media. I just don't think we need to be making a huge change like this. And as we heard from the Assistant Commissioner Myers, is we really don't have the data. Now, I'm not against the idea of protecting a resource. That's not what I'm here for. What I'm against is what we've seen in the past, especially over the summer, things get decided based on social media. You know, I constantly hear we need to be science-driven. As a chemist, I get it. That's what my training is, things I do every day. So I get that. And if we need to bring in all stakeholders, and that's really a concern of mine, that we have agencies who aren't on board 100%, maybe neutral, because we haven't got the data. So I want to make sure we're making good decisions, because in haste, hiccups happen. So thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Representative Becker Finn.
I just wanted to respond to a couple of things. First, by changing it from a rough fish to a game fish, I'm not telling the DNR what the number should be. I'm just saying it shouldn't be completely unlimited in what the take is. So this idea that somehow doing this is anti-science in the way that dictating, you know, what the walleye limit should be statewide, or, you know, whatever that other motivations are for some of those limits, that's not what this is at all. This is asking the DNR to look into this further. And as Assistant Commissioner Meyer just said, yes, they should be protected somehow. And right now they are not protected in any way whatsoever because they're rough fish with no limits on their take. As far as the insinuation, you know, I don't know what the insinuation is. If the public is supportive and members of this committee are supportive, I don't feel that I need some, whether it's a lobbyist or some other person who's paid to lobby about things to tell me whether this is a good idea or not. We can read the articles. We can talk to the public. We can publicly have a discussion like this and we can move forward. That's really our job as legislators. And so, and finally, this is one of those things where instead of waiting until it's too late, until we realize that the population is in a decline and, we have those numbers, I will leave you with a quote from one of the researchers on this issue. It is a dangerous game to have an unregulated take associated with a growing sport. And it's a sport we don't understand and don't monitor yet. And so I think this is just the first step in saying, hey, we need to be paying attention to this. Let's not wait until it's too late and we're trying to save a species, because that's always much harder than preventing a problem before it becomes too big. So it's a good amendment, and I encourage member support.
All right. With that, I will turn to Chair Hansen. Do you have any position on the amendment or any comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Becker Finn and members, for a good discussion. I support the amendment and would request a roll call.
A roll call has been requested. The clerk will take the roll on the amendment.
Hansen, Rick?
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Wasilewicz, Amy?
Wasilewicz, aye.
Wasilewicz, aye. Heinzelman, Josh?
No.
Heinzelman, no. Akam, Patty.
Akam, aye.
Akam, aye. Acklin, Susan.
Acklin, no.
Acklin, no. Becker, Jeff.
Becker, no.
Becker, no. Becker, Finn, Jamie.
Aye.
Eckerson, aye. Eklund, Rob.
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Fisher, Peter.
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Green, Steve.
No.
Green, no. I go, Spencer.
No.
I go, no. Jordan, Sydney.
Aye.
Jordan, aye. Keeler, Heather.
Keeler, aye.
Keeler, aye. Lee, boo.
Lee.
Representative Lee, can you repeat that? You kind of cut out.
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Lippert, Todd.
Lippert, aye.
Lippert, aye. Lewick, Dale.
Lewick, no.
Lewick, no. Morrison, Kelly.
Morrison, aye.
Morrison, aye. Nelson, Nathan.
Nelson, no.
Nelson, no. Tice, Gamma.
Tice, no.
Tice, no. That is 11 ayes and 8 noes.
The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. We'll move on to the next one here. The next one is the A11 amendment. Representative Lippert, I believe that is your amendment. Would you like to move that amendment and explain what it's about?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I move the A11 amendment. This amendment adds a soil health goal for Minnesota in conjunction with the soil health cost share program included in the omnibus bill. The goal is for 30% of privately owned farmland in Minnesota to be utilizing soil health building practices, including cover crops, no-till, or reduced tillage, strip cropping, and managed rotational grazing. Goals are important. They drive action. They lead to measurable outcomes. The challenge is to find a goal that pushes us to achieve more than we would have otherwise, but also doesn't feel out of reach. I think this goal of 30% of farmland by 2030 is in that sweet spot, and it will be a good complement to the soil health cost share program already in the bill.
Representative Lippert has moved the A11 amendment. I see Representative Heinzman has a question. Representative Heinzman?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I am interested in how this amendment is written and how goals would be measured. Maybe Representative Lippert could expand on that since I'm not seeing it specifically in the language.
Representative Lippert?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Heintzman. So the amendment is rooted in the soil health definition that's already in statute in 103.101 subdivision 10A. And then builds off of that. Bowser currently knows the amount of acreage that's in cover crop, for instance. It's at, you know, 3%, 4%, or 5%. And so Bowser would be able to track that information, be able to help us figure out where we are in relation to the goal.
Madam Chair.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Bowser was brought up. Is it possible for Bowser, do they have someone here that could speak to whether or not they support this? I've not seen this before. Maybe I missed it, but it would be great to get some feedback from Bowser.
I am not sure if someone from Bowser is here at the moment. I'll see if anyone unmutes himself here.
Madam Chair, John Jaski is here.
Ah, Mr. Jaski, if you want to address that question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Heinzman. The short answer is yes. You know, we do have mechanisms to track soil health practices, you know, in various ways, in cooperation with the federal agency, also the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Natural Resources Conservation Service. We also have a partnership in place with the University of Minnesota, the Office for Soil Health there, that is using remote technology to do that very thing.
Madam Chair.
Representative Heinzman, did you have a follow-up?
Yeah, I did. Thank you, Madam Chair. So maybe the director or the bill or amendment author could help me understand where the 30% number came from. Is that an arbitrary thing? Is that backed up by some research that we could look at?
Representative Lippert, do you want to tackle that one first?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Heinzman. So there's, as part of another bill, House File 701, it had a goals component that was more aggressive than this one, 50% of farmers utilizing soil health practices by 2030. That passed the Ag Committee 11-1, and we had conversations about goals there. There have been a variety of numbers that have been considered. The challenge is finding that goal that's in that sweet spot. And we feel like this, after more conversation with a variety of groups, feel like this number, 30% of farmland by 2030,
is a number that can both be motivating and feels reachable at the same time.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment. If those watching at home are paying attention, you might notice that there's nothing to back up this number that's being used, this 30% number. It's literally an arbitrary pull out of nowhere number. If the bill author had that information, I'm sure Representative Lippert would have mentioned it. So, you know, I hope that there's some more data that comes available that may support or may not support this that could be considered before we move forward with a mandate like this. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I see Representative Nelson had his hand up next. Representative Nelson.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And just kind of a question. What I heard the number about 3% of cover crops right now, our land is planted in cover crops, but I'm just kind of looking at the list of, you know, cover crops, reduced tillage, perennial crops, rotational grazing. I'm just kind of wondering, do you know what amount of farmland, pasture land is currently being done with these practices? And, you know, I guess one of my concerns is, you know, when you look through the USDA and the NRCS, they define farmland and pasture land separately. So, you know, that I think there's some work that needs to be done on the amendment, obviously, but just what do you have an idea of what number of our farmland, pasture land is already done in through soil healthy practices?
I don't have an idea, but maybe Representative Lippert does.
I'm sorry, that was supposed to be for the
No, that's
the
okay. Sorry. Representative Lippert, do you want to take that one?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Nelson, it's a good question. So in conversation with some of the organizations that about this, we believe there's roughly 8 to 10% of farmland employing practices of one kind or another. Bowser may have more information on this. I think in general, we recognize that there's a need to be protecting our soils from more volatile rain events. We want to be putting these practices on our soils to improve water quality, benefit the health of the soil, productivity of the soil, also to help us respond to climate change. We need to get these practices on more and more of the land, and we believe that this kind of goal will help us move faster than we will be able to otherwise.
I don't know if Mr. Jashke has anything to add to that, any other statistics or data that he wants to jump in with?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Lippert covered it pretty well. Representative Nelson, a good question. You know, actually, some of these things have a bit of crossover, too, as you know, Representative Nelson. I mean, some of the grazing takes place, you know, obviously dedicated pasture land. We also see cover crops being also grazed, right, with producers who have those types of facilities and arrangements so they can accomplish that as well after the, you know, commodity crop is harvested. So I think Representative Lippert is actually pretty close. I mean, we have about somewhere in the 3 to 4% of just our production commodity crop land in cover crops, but that the good news is it's increasing about 30 to 40% since the last time that ag statistic number was inventoried. So I don't know, I can't do the math in my head about whether it gets us to 30%, but we're going in the right direction, but the challenge is to accelerate that effort.
Representative Nelson, did you have a follow-up?
No, I just thank you for that, and I don't know if there's really a solid answer at this time of, you know, what percentage, are done with soil healthy practices. And I think that might be a good starting point is figuring out where to, working with Bowser and USDA, NRCS, FSA, kind of working together and, you know, find out what's in perennial crops and, does hayland count as that, you know, alfalfa and, what is in conservation tillage and whatnot like that. If we follow some of these, we may already be at the 30%. So anyway, thank you for that. And back to you, Madam Chair.
All right, next up I have Representative Backer, and then we'll go to Representative Green after that. Representative Backer.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And to the author, Representative Lippert. who contacted you on this to have this bill on this amendment? What process came about on this?
Representative Lippert?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Backer. So I've been working on goals related to soil health for Minnesota with farmers. House Bill 701 was really driven by farmers, and the goals in that bill were, more ambitious than this goal that we're talking about now. So there are farmers who are experimenting with soil health practices who are really excited about the changes that they're seeing in their soil. More farmers want to get these practices on their land. They're seeing, a couple obstacles, one being just technical assistance, the other being finances, which is what the cost share program is about. But they also recognize the need for a goal, too, to push us along.
Representative Backer, did you have a follow-up?
Yeah, please. So what ag groups were you in touch with about this, Representative Lippert?
Representative Lippert?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Backer. So I'm in conversation with Minnesota Farmers Union about this, Land Stewardship Project about this, had conversations with the coalition that the Nature Conservancy is working with, which includes Cargill, other larger farm groups, as well as farmers in my local area that aren't necessarily connected to any farm groups, but are just farmers who care about their craft, care about their work and the soil of Minnesota and want to move these practices onto the land.
Representative Backer?
Yeah, I got it. For time's sake, I'll stop my questions. One of the things I want to share with, I appreciate what the author is saying, but the last statement concerns me. I've not met a farmer that is not concerned about the health of their farmland. To say only some of the farmers are, and I don't know if you implied that by mistake or so forth, but all farmers are concerned. I mean, cover crops are planted for the particular reason to manage erosion, to help soil quality, helps with what weeds and pests. So in my district, I am probably the largest, if not the second largest, of farmland. And I would really encourage to contact folks in my district because they are good stewards of their land. And to manage, to throw out a number of 30% and to make an assumption that there are people who aren't concerned about their land concerns me. And it does sound like from what you shared, Representative Lippert, some of the groups that you contacted don't have much footings in the districts, the western part of Minnesota, where we have such rich farmland and people take such great care with the health of their land. So I would really invite you to do that. I'm going to help you out with that, because that is the area I represent, is all farm ag area. So thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Lippert, thank you.
Representative Green, you're next up, and then we'll go to Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question was going to be for the author of the bill, Representative Lippert, but I think Representative Backer asked that question as far as where did the bill come from? Did the agency bring the bill forward? In fact, I will ask you that, Representative Lippert. Did the agency come to you with this proposal?
Representative Lippert?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Green. So this conversation related to goals is one that we've, I've had with Bowser, and we were, as we've been sorting out the best way to move forward. But the conversation about goals has really been driven by our conversations with farmers in relation to another bill, House File 701.
Representative Green, did you have a follow-up?
Yes, I do, Madam Chair. Thank you. This would be for Mr. Jaski. When I'm reading this amendment, this doesn't make really a lot of sense. And so the first question for Mr. Jaski would be is it the intention of your agency to go out and mandate this now? And how are you going to do that? I mean, when you reach 30%, where do you stop? And how do you, you're going on private land, which is a big problem, and you're going to be coming in and telling farmers what they can and can't do with their own land, but only 30% of them. So where's the guidelines?
Mr. Jeschke?
Yeah, Madam Chair and Representative Green, the bill as we read it does not make it a mandate. It's yes, it is working on it with private landowners. That's the way our conservation programs are all pretty much set up, and as are the USDA programs, and they are reliant on a voluntary approach, including all of the soil health practices. So we envision it being going forward just like it is currently.
Representative Green, did you have a Representative Lippert, did you want to address
Madam
that?
Madam Chair, if I can just simply add, yes, you know, this isn't to Representative Green, this isn't a mandate, it's a measuring stick. And, you know, I think most organizations, businesses, if they're trying to do something new, they set goals. And I think that's what we're talking about here, that we want this to be successful. We want to accelerate the adoption of these practices and support farmers who are interested in them, want to step into it, and it's an opt-in for them. And we think this goal will be helpful for us in tracking our progress.
Representative Green, did you have a follow-up?
Yes, I do. In fact, because I don't think I'm going to get anywhere with questions, I don't think I got a real answer from Mr. Jeschke. I'm just going to end with this. If you would come out, Representative Lippert, and talk to the people in the ag community all across greater Minnesota, they will tell you how mandates start. And they start with these goals. And if you've been around long enough and dealt with the agencies long enough, you know that. And this will be used in the future to impose more regulation and more mandates on our farmers and their soil and their land. I don't like this bill. I think if it's at best not necessary, and I think it's going to be very damaging. And it's bills like this and things like this that cause so much animosity between private owners of land and basically the public in general, and the state of Minnesota and the agencies that reside here. So I won't be supporting this. I think it's poorly thought out. I don't think there's any science based in it at all. It's just somebody's idea, and it's going to be damaging. Thank you.
All right, next I have Representative Lewick and then Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question for the author of the amendment. Is it your intention that this amendment cover all farmland in the state of Minnesota?
Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Lewick. So we recognize that different farmland is in different situations, but to the extent practicable, yes, we'd like to help farmers adopt these sorts of practices in ways that fit their particular area and the crops that they're using.
Representative Lewick, did you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The way you've worded this is a little bit deceptive, because you throw in the "but not limited to," but I think everybody needs to understand this applies to all privately owned farmland. I guess the other question I would have for the author of the amendment is, can you tell us, of all that privately owned farmland, how many of those farmers out there are not practicing appropriate soil benefiting practices? I mean, that's the real issue here. You know, Representative Lippert, can you tell me, out of all those farmers, how many of them out there specifically, by a hard number or percentage, that you are certain that you have the data on, that they are not practicing soil health practices that will improve their soil?
Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Lewick. I mean, I feel like this is a return to the conversation we were having earlier, as we're, so I don't have the number on the specific number of farmers. I think we can get a little bit closer to zeroing in on that information as we're looking at percentage of farmland, and we were talking about 8 to 10% in general. But what we also know is that more farmers want to be integrating these practices, learning more about how to use them, because they're seeing the benefits from their neighbors and from others across the state. And so that's what we want to support.
Representative Lewick.
Madam Chair, if I could.
Yep.
do you intend to offer this as some type of amendment for the agriculture bill, or is this the only place that you're going to attempt to move this forward in a committee that is environmental and natural resources and doesn't have direct jurisdiction over agriculture practices?
Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Lewick. We talked about these goals, more aggressive ones, actually, in the Agriculture Committee earlier this session, and it passed out of that committee by an overwhelming margin, 11-1, I believe. So this conversation about goals has happened in multiple committees, and it's very appropriate to have that conversation here and add the goal into this bill.
Representative Lewick, one more.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. We're making some presumptions about private agriculture. We're in the wrong committee to be dealing with this. This opens the door for another set of mandates that our good friends in the soil and water conservation districts will be forced to impose, even though it's a goal. When you start throwing those kind of things out, you immediately assign the black hat to a whole number of people that don't jump in there and may have already put these practices in place. They just haven't been counted, or maybe folks haven't noticed. I'm just concerned that primarily this is in the wrong committee. It would be nice if we would stay just a little bit more focused on parameters here. This should be something that's dealt exclusively within the Agriculture Committee, but I certainly don't support it. It's a blank check, and it's another mandate that's going to be forced on our local soil and water conservation districts, and frankly going to cause a lot of angst at the local level. You get concerned about why some county boards and local units of government hesitate to throw in a lot of local property tax money to support those soil and water conservation district people are doing. And this is the kind of exact example that does not make it easier. When it comes down out of St. Paul, here's what you got to do. I fear that where you're going to end up in a situation where Mr. Jaski's organization is going to have to fund all of this, because you're going to drive the counties into going, wait a minute, too much coming out of St. Paul, no more local control. Why are we going to keep banging the local property taxpayers on the levy to support the soil and water district? So a lot of this has got a lot bigger ramifications than just making the perception that everybody out there, or at least, 90%, 85% of the people that are in agriculture are not practicing good soil standard practices, so certainly can't support it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first of all, I want to say thank you, Representative Lippert, for bringing this bill forward on soil health. It is very important, has everything to do with environment. About 4 to 5 years ago at the University of Minnesota's Water Resource Conference, there were some farmers that came in and did some large presentations on soil health and what can be gained by soil health in a number of areas. And your provisions here get to a lot of what they were advocating for that can help improve our environment. By improving the soil health out there and following the newer practices that used to be old practices that had fallen by the wayside, they found that when soil health was properly restored, that you no longer needed tiling out there, because even in very wet conditions, the farmers could go out with their heavy equipment and do the work with and still do it in what would typically be muddy conditions. But because of the soil health, it would be allowed, they could allow to go on. The soil was alive and healthy. They're showing videos of what happened when you had good soil health out there with the organisms living there and how better the crops grew and how you needed less tiling out there. There was less water runoff out there that reduced the need or irrigation down the road. And we know when we have the water runoff, it takes nutrients in it, and it causes erosion out there. It helps hold water back on the land, and that's the big thing that we've talked a lot about. How do we hold water on the land? And good soil health will do that. And that's one of the things that I heard very loudly that as it was being presented at the Minnesota University of Minnesota's Water Resource Conference. And one of the things that one of the farmers was telling me about is that one of the challenges they had in trying to get their fellow farmers to do it is because that's not what everybody was used to doing. Everybody's used to having it look exactly the same way, crisp and pristine out on the landscape. And anytime someone's doing something a little different, it kind of stands out, and there's that peer pressure out there. And they said we needed to find ways to help encourage people to take a look at different ways to manage their farmland out there and adopt these soil health conditions. And I think you found a great way to do that is by setting an aspirational goal out there, a goal to help let people know this is where we're driving to, not making it mandatory, and then measuring and seeing how we're doing in that. And I think that's how you get people to start changing their minds. And these were recommendations that were not coming from government. Now, these were what I was hearing from farmers who are presenting subjects on this at a water resource conference, saying here's what we do need to do that not only restores the health of the soil, but helps protect our environment going forward. So I want to say thank you very much for the hard work you've been doing on it. And I will be voting yes on the bill with your provision in it because of that. Thank you.
Any further discussion? I'm not seeing any other hands going up. Representative Lippert, did you just want to make a closing remark here and then we'll move ahead?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks. I thank the committee for the discussion. You know, again, I would say it's not a mandate, it's a measuring stick, and we need to be adopting these practices. There are farmers that are really excited about more farmers that want to be doing these practices. It's what the cost share program's about, and the goal will help us accelerate that adoption too. So thanks for the discussion, everyone.
Chair Hansen, do you have any comments on the amendment or a position you want to share?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I support the amendment. I do want to note for the record that the Board of Water and Soil Resources is within the jurisdiction of this committee. Since the legacy amendment has passed, this committee over the years has allocated hundreds of millions of dollars to voluntary conservation practices in the state of Minnesota, probably more than any other state. And so what Representative Lippert is doing is establishing a goal to try to incent those practices, voluntary practices, and it is a worthy goal, and I would ask for a roll call.
A roll call has been requested on the amendment. The clerk will take the roll.
Hansen, Rick.
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Wasilewicz, Amy.
Wasilewicz, aye.
Wasilewicz, aye. Heintzeman, Josh.
Heintzeman, no.
Heintzeman, no. Akam, Patty.
Akam, aye.
Akam, aye. Ackland, Susan.
Ackland, no.
Ackland, no. Backer, Jeff.
Backer, no.
Backer, no. Becker, Finn, Jamie.
Aye.
Becker, Finn, aye. Ackland, Rob.
Aye.
Ackland, aye. Fisher, Peter.
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Green, Steve.
No.
Green, no. I go, Spencer.
I go, no.
I go, no. Jordan, Sydney.
Jordan, aye.
Jordan, aye. Keeler, Heather.
Keeler, aye.
Keeler, aye. Lee, Fu.
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Lippert, Todd.
Lippert, aye.
Lippert, aye. Lewick, Dale.
Lewick, no.
Lewick, no. Morrison, Kelly.
Morrison, aye.
Morrison, aye. Nelson, Nathan.
Nelson.
Sorry, Representative Nelson, can you repeat that?
Nelson, no.
Nelson, no. Tice, Tama.
Tice, yes. No. Tice, no.
That is 11 ayes and 8 noes.
The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Next up is the A8 amendment, and I'm going to turn it over to Chair Hansen on this one.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if viewers of the committee and committee members would remember, as we moved through the dry cleaner agreement earlier this session, Representative Heintzeman asked me if we would continue to work on the dry cleaner fee and cap issue. And we had this language, and Representative Heintzeman, I know you're not willing to author this. What I'm asking is that we keep the conversation going. I would like to move it to try to, so that we have something in the bill moving forward to keep that conversation going. I think there was a wise little creature once that said, do or do not, there is no try. So I would ask us to do this and keep it going. And I would not ask for a roll call on this.
So Chair Hansen, you are moving the A8 amendment.
I was not moving it. I'd like to hear Representative Heintzman.
Okay, Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Heintzman Hansen, for wanting to try to fix this problem and giving me the opportunity to participate in that. I think that I should just quickly mention that while we were able to, I think, get through some of the challenges with getting an amendment, MPCA's help is appreciated. Unfortunately, as I'm visiting with the dry cleaners, they have a lot of concerns with the approach that we're using. And I'm not going to be able to support the amendment today, but at the same time, I think that we all are in a bipartisan way at least looking at this issue. And I do think that a solution will come. I just don't think it's going to come in the form that we had drafted today. And that's why I couldn't offer it. So thank you, Chair Hansen, for that. And thank you for the opportunity to make some comments.
Chair Hansen.
Madam Chair, I would move the A8 amendment.
Chair Hansen has moved the A8 amendment. Any further discussion on this amendment? I don't see any hands popping up here. All those in favor of adopting the A8 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, say no.
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 The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Last one we have on the list is the A10 amendment. Who would like to present or move that amendment?
Madam Chair,
Bueller? Just kidding. Okay. Chair Hansen.
Madam Chair, and I don't know if Representative Heintzman, this, I talked with Representative Juergens this morning about this. The issue of wake boats and environmental issues related to those is important. I think we should try to continue that conversation, but setting the precedent of having the state pay for enforcement of no wake zones, I could see that happen on every lake or river, and I don't think we want to set that precedent. So I will not move it. I think you have, Representative Heintzman, you have my commitment that we will continue this conversation. I just don't feel we should break the seal on this right now.
Madam Chair.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just add to that that the precedent is the concern here. It's not the issue. We understand how important it is to prevent this problem across the state. And I'm grateful that we're going to continue the conversation. Thank you, Chair Hansen. And even though the amendment may not be moving forward, the conversation certainly still is.
Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like, if we've got a representative from the DNR here, to ask a question. I know I've had conversations over the past couple of years with folks in the DNR and also at the water safety folks at the county level over really, really aggressively getting out there and enforcing the current laws on the books. And so I know we've attempted to have a couple of in-person meetings, but Commissioner Meyer, COVID's kind of messed that up, but I really want to hear the DNR's perspective because at this point, and I'll just cut to the quick, I think we've got a lack of enforcement situation, and I think we need to figure out how to raise the awareness on that and certainly not start throwing dollars at specific counties. I think we need to look at a statewide approach, and I think it really needs to be on on education and really cranking up enforcement. But I'd like to hear from Commissioner, Assistant Commissioner Meyer on that, please.
Commissioner Meyer.
Madam Chairman, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner. Representative Lewick and committee members, I think we're confusing two different issues. The amendment that has been withdrawn was to provide funding for a no-wake zone on the Mississippi River coming out of the Hastings Lock. It didn't have anything to do with wake boats or local other waters. It dealt with that issue. And we are working with those entities, and there's a process that needs to be followed for that to be established. The issue of wakeboard boats and wakes in general is one that we are working with stakeholders on and working with you all on. Actually, the University of Minnesota's hydrological study on wake impacts, I believe, is coming out later this month. And I think the other body may be hearing and having an informational hearing on that as that comes out. That will provide information on how do we regulate that and what those regulations perhaps should look like. Education is a huge component requiring safety education for boaters of a mandatory age, I think, is one real solution that we're working on. I don't think we had time to get to that this session, but hopefully next year come to a consensus position on that. And once we learn more about the wake impacts and we educate people, it's like recycling. Let's teach the kids so they can teach their parents or tell their parents how to operate these boats the right way. As far as enforcement, Representative Lewick, this House bill will provide additional dollars for the DNR to provide to local sheriffs, and they all have watercraft enforcement officers as well. This bill, with the increased registration, will provide increased funding to those units of government to help us enforce those laws that are out there. And once again, we can only enforce the laws when people tell us. We can't be everywhere, right? So if people are seeing violations, they need to contact their local law enforcement or conservation officers so we can enforce the laws that are on the books. I think with those approaches and learning more of how to craft regulations on these things for next year, we'll come to a solution on the issue.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Lewick, did you have a quick follow-up? Otherwise, we're going to move to final.
Just a quick comment, and I appreciate that, Assistant Commissioner Meyer. We've got some work to do in this area, and I guess, the word no wake in this amendment, the problem is that when the wakes get into the no wake zone, obviously that's a non-starter. So appreciate that clarification on the specific language in the amendment. But we've got some long-term things here to resolve on how we deal with responsibility for the wake that your boat creates. So thank you.
All right. No one has moved that amendment, so we're going to move on to final vote. Representative Hansen, would you move the DE2 amendment as amended?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move the DE2 amendment as amended.
Representative Hansen, we will take. Do you want a roll call on that?
I do want a roll call.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Clerk will take the roll on the DE2 amendment as amended.
Hansen, Rick.
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Wasilewicz, Amy.
Wasilewicz, aye.
Wasilewicz, aye. Heintzeman, Josh. Heintzeman, Josh. Come back. I don't think I can hear you. Akam, Patty.
Akam, aye.
Akam, aye. Ackland, Susan.
Ackland, no.
Ackland, no. Backer, Jeff.
Backer, no.
Backer, no. Becker, Finn, Jamie.
Aye.
Becker, Finn, aye. Ackland, Rob.
Aye.
Ackland, aye. Fisher, Peter.
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Green, Steve.
No.
Green, no. Igo, Spencer.
Igo, no.
I go no. Jordan, Sydney.
Aye.
Jordan, aye. Keeler, Heather.
Keeler, aye.
Keeler, aye. Lee, Fu.
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Lippert, Todd.
Lippert, aye.
Lippert, aye. Lewick, Dale.
Lewick, no.
Lewick, no. Morrison, Kelly.
Morrison, aye.
Morrison, aye. Nelson, Nathan.
Nelson, no.
Nelson, no. Tice, Tama.
No.
Tice, no. And then just to go back, Heintzeman, Josh.
Heintzeman, no.
Knights and Mendel. That is 11 ayes and 8 noes.
The motion prevails, and the DE2 amendment as amended has been adopted. Moving on here, Representative Hansen, we now have House File 1076 with the DE2 amendment adopted. Did you have any closing comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and just a few closing comments. We are in unprecedented times. These are very challenging situations, but the problems that we have faced before and new problems that have arisen have not gone away during this COVID period. I want to thank the staff and thank the members for persevering through the Zoom meetings that we have had and putting this bill together. But just because something is difficult doesn't mean it shouldn't be done. It is important for us to try to solve problems. That's what we were elected for. That's what why we ran for office and why the people in our district voted for us. They voted for us to represent them, not a stakeholder, not an interest group, not somebody, but for them. And that's what I think this bill does. It recognizes the challenges that face our state and our environment, and it tries to resolve those problems. And we've had open discussion about that. The opposition that comes forward is valuable in shaping the debate. However, no is not an option. Always saying no to anything does not move us forward. It only holds us back. And we need to move forward. And we need to move forward together coming out of this. Creativity, innovation, experimentation, all of those things always have opposition. And we recognize that. But we need to move forward. I'm asking for your support for this bill.
Chair Hansen, I see that Representative Heintzman has his hand up. Are you okay with some closing comments from him, or do you want us to move forward with the vote?
I'm fine with him.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Hansen. The process was just a little bit wonky with Zoom, so I apologize for having comments at this stage in the conversation. But I do need to quickly point out that obviously the minority sees the bill through a little bit different lens. It's a very large bill. It contains an enormous amount of policy that is a huge problem for a lot of the organizations and groups that we represent around the state, our constituents, of course, as well. And I just need to point out that we would like to support this bill. There are some things that are really important to those same groups I mentioned a moment ago. But of course, there are the problems, and we'll be discussing those further as it arrives on the House floor. And I eagerly anticipate that opportunity, and thank the chair and the bill author for the indulgence. Thank you.
Chair Hansen, did you have something else? Go ahead.
Yes. Well, thank you, Representative Heintzman. I would look forward to working with you on this. If we can shake loose the two LCCMR bills, or maybe the lands bills, I think they would likely pass off the floor with very strong bipartisan support. So I extend the invitation again for us to work together on those and prevent them from being caught up in the end of session challenges that the Minnesota legislature has often faced. So I appreciate working with you and your committee and members, and hope we can continue that discussion to do what's best for Minnesota.
And with that, Representative Hansen renews his motion that House File 1076, as amended, be recommended to be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee and directs nonpartisan staff to make any technical corrections to conform with the action and intent of the committee. The clerk will take the roll.
Hansen, Rick.
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Wasilewicz, Amy.
Wasilewicz, aye.
Wasilewicz, aye. Heintzman, Josh.
No.
Heintzman, no. Akram, Patty.
Akram, aye.
Akram, aye. Ackland, Susan.
Ackland, no.
Ackland, no. Backer, Jeff.
Backer, no.
Backer, no. Becker, Finn, Jamie.
Aye.
Becker, Finn, aye. Eklund, Rob.
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Fisher, Peter.
Fisher votes aye.
Fisher, aye. Green, Steve.
No.
Green, no. I go, Spencer.
I go, no.
I go, no. Jordan, Sydney.
Jordan, aye.
Jordan, aye. Keeler, Heather.
Keeler, aye.
Keeler, aye. Lee, Fu.
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Lippert, Todd.
Lippert, aye.
Lippert, aye. Lewick, Dale.
Lewick, no.
Lewick, no. Morrison, Kelly.
Morrison, aye.
Morrison, aye. Nelson, Nathan.
Nelson, no.
Nelson, no. Tice, Tama.
No.
Tice, no. That is 11 ayes and 8 noes.
The motion prevails, and the bill is on its way to Ways and Means. Thank you, everyone, for all the good work. And with that, we are adjourned.